Accession number 34721, reel 1.
Well, the Huel got me, spoke to the maitre of the London, and I went up there and was interviewed, amongst other things, by a doctor. And when he said, "Stand on your right leg," and I stood on my left leg, he said, "You won't be much of a nurse." And I said, "Oh, well, I've just had a sprained ankle and I can't stand on that one today." And so the message from the matron was that she'd be glad to have me when my ankle was better. And I went up, and instead of, if I'd been a nurse who was going to be fully trained, I would have been given a uniform and £15 a year. It might have been 15 guineas, but I don't know. But I paid 60 guineas, and I went to Tredegar House, Bow, where it was a sort of training college for nurses to begin with. I was there 6 weeks, going to the hospital for lectures and cookery lessons and those sort of things every day, and learning to wash a dummy woman, and taking your own temperature, and learning how to do anything like that, you see.
I've still got your notebooks of your training course.
Yes, you have those at the London Hospital. Well, then after 6 weeks, I went to live in the nurse's home at the London Hospital and went into the wards. Well, the matron, I'd forgotten how many of us there were, quite a number. I don't know whether it would be 20 of us, something like that, in one batch. And we were all put in different wards. And most of my batch were the daughters of dukes and earls, because they were going to open their houses to be hospitals, and not really needing very well-trained nurses. They were going to take convalescent officers and that sort of thing, you see. And one of the ones who wrote her book, who had been to Guy's Hospital for a training like that, was Diana Manners. But she only worked in her mother's hospital and used to go out to dances at night and that sort of thing, you know. It wasn't like we were. Well, there was only about one other like me. I've forgotten her name now. It was a Scotch name. She had two aunts, lived at Reigate or somewhere. And she stayed on at the London in the end and didn't nurse soldiers in the army. And after I was in the newspapers at the age of 86, when Crusoe had taken me to the bottom of the sea, she read my name in the papers and she wrote to me from Cambridge, that girl. And she'd married the registrar at the London Hospital and was living in Cambridge. And she's dead now, but she wrote to me for 2 or 3 years in Edinburgh after that. Alison was brought up on books that her husband had written to do with nursing and things. Well, where have I got to? Oh, yes. I went to the London, and on Tuesday nights, late after supper, you very often went and had coffee at the matron's house. Miss Luckett's a very, very famous matron. You've got the book she wrote. I sent it up to you. And she said to me, when the first night she met me, knowing I was Hugh's sister-in-law, she said, "Oh, if you stay on at the hospital here instead of going into military, I'll make you a sister." And I said, "Oh, well, matron, I don't want to nurse always. I'm only doing it because there's a war." Well, then, after about 3 months, I wasn't used to living in a town full of germs and working frightfully hard in boiling hot weather. And I suddenly wakened up. My collar had cut me, and I got a boil on my neck. And I was put into Six Sisters. And there, the matron saw me and she said, "Oh, I don't think you're strong enough for my hospital. You better go straight into military. However, I finished my 6 months there, and at the end of it was lent to Queen Alexandra's military nursing service as what they called a special military probationer, which my brothers called simple, modest person. And I had orders to go to a hospital called Bagthorpe outside Nottingham. And when I got into the train in London to go there, a girl walked into the carriage in the same uniform as me, going to the same place, and her name was Doris Carter. And her father was a minister in Croydon, and she'd been at Croydon High School with my sister Alison, much younger. Well, I was in Bagthorpe for a year, and at the end of that, there were 6 of us who were special military probationers. Carter and myself, Blanco, Ward, Madison and Burton, and we all had orders to go to Southampton on a Sunday to embark on the Britannic and to be taken to Serbia. And then we suddenly had a telegram to say, get onto the ship on Saturday. And this was because the Serbs were all leaving Serbia and we wouldn't be allowed to land there, and we were going to become staff of the Britannic until there was a day when we might be able to land in Serbia, because we had canvas beds and baths and things like that, you see. And the one batch had already gone to Serbia, and they'd written to us and said, "We are washing our aprons in cold water and very nearly in the trenches. Bring grey aprons," and we made grey aprons to take with us. However, they went to the bottom of the sea when we were torpedoed. Well, these orders came, and Burton didn't come on the Britannic because she hadn't good enough circulation, and Carter was in bed ill and she didn't come. And she later married one of the officers she was nursing at Bagthorpe. And in my address book, when I was in my 90s, I think, no, 86, I found her address pinned in there when she'd married this man, Paul Marchais-Olay Antwerp. And a week ago, her daughter, who was born at Paul Marchais-Olay Antwerp, came to see me here and brought her son with her, who is a doctor in Bristol and lives near this place. And anyway, we lost Carter until Cousteau found me and took me to the bottom of the sea, and I was in the newspapers. And Carter wrote to the newspaper and found me in Edinburgh. Well, when I came to live in Bath, she was living in Seaton, Devon, in a granny part of her daughter's house. And she used to come up and visit me.
Okay.
Well, we went down and joined Botanic and found that as we hadn't been able to go to Serbia, as the Serbs were leaving their own country, we were being kept on the Botanic until such time as we could land in Serbia. And we therefore, of course, never got there, because our all our beds and kits for that country went down to the bottom of the sea when the ship was torpedoed. Well, the first voyage, we went from Southampton to Naples, where for 2 days we took on coal. So they couldn't take enough from England to do the whole return journey. And we used to leave the ship, and the first voyage, I went to Pompeii, and the next voyage, I went to Little Vesuvius and burnt the soles off my slippers there, walking over what had been the mouth of a volcano. That place was very attractive, down by the sea, with a little Grecian temple. And St. Paul had landed there in his days when he seemed to travel to all the places we went to later. And little boys on the beach used to sell us little tiny sea horses that were very attractive. Isn't that what you call them?
Yes.
Little dried things of 2-3 inches tall. I wish I'd got them now. Well, we used to go to Mudros, and there was a huge harbour there. You didn't see villages or people. All you saw on the top of the hills were little tiny windmills, only about the height of a room.
Are they in train, people?
I put them up.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
And we used to get there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and 8 ships, P&O, British India, boats of that sort, came from Malta, from Egypt, from Bombay even, bringing us patients who had been wounded in places like Gallipoli, and had they were nursed in these hospitals until they were fit to go on to England. And so these 8 ships used to bring them to us, and we used to carry 3,000 patients back to Southampton in 6.5 days. And the first time voyage I went out, we took from Southampton to Mudros VADs and nurses and doctors who were going to all these different hospitals in Malta, and mostly Malta. And one of them I met the first voyage was Marjorie Scott, who'd been at school with me at Poland. And one of them also was Vera Brittain, who wrote Testament Abuse later. And she was on her way to Malta as a VAD. Well, when we had been torpedoed and got to Malta, I was billeted in a hospital there where Vera Brittain was. And she had a photograph taken of herself with me and Ward and Matteson and Blenko, because she'd been on the Britannia when she went out, you see. And you'll find that photograph in my scrapbook now. Well, when we went
home after that first voyage, there was a most terrible storm. I was always on night duty, and I worked in four different wards on three different floors. The very big one at the top had the men who really had weren't so fit, but the lower ones on F deck were below water level and double decker bunk beds, you know, one above the other. Well, we had such a terrible storm, we were battened down for 4.5 days, going through the Bay of Biscay and home to Southampton. Nobody could go on the deck, it was terribly stormy, and the ship was listing. And the sister who worked with me at night was so sick that she never did any work at all. She sat in the kitchen, in the bathroom, and was sick all night. I used to go into the bathroom and be sick for 5 minutes, and on the hour I would go round all the wards, and having some work to do, was not sick until I got back to the bathroom. With no work. But it was, we had such a list on that the stair to the lowest wards was just a staircase, a little, I don't know what you call it, little loose steps with a handrail. And there was such a list, you very nearly had to walk down the back of it instead of the front. It was very difficult to get down to the ward, because the steps were, instead of being this way, were that way. Well, when we got back after that storm, there'd been damage to our ship, and matter of fact, we'd seen a floating mine in the English Channel as we went by, and they let us go home for a couple of days. And Mr. Abbott, next door to our house in Molding, took a photograph of me in my kilt, sitting on the steps with a stick, just going to go out to walk at Rowland. And in my scrapbook, you'll see that photograph, which Mother was very pleased to have, because if I'd been drowned, it was the last time she ever saw me. And when the two American men who wrote The Fallen Star recently about damaged Cunard liners, they copied that photograph and put it into their book, The Fallen Star, as well as one of me, aged 98, which I wish they hadn't put in. I'm too blind to see how dreadful it looks, but still. Now, the next time, whenever we went round Cape Matapan, there were so many hidey holes. Now, we were always waiting to be torpedoed and expecting it. And Colin had taken guns out to America during the war and had a Jeeve waistcoat, which he gave to me. And in my cabin, I not only had my ship's waistcoat, but my ship's life belt, but this Jeeve waistcoat. And when I went up, when we were hit, I took the Jeeve waistcoat up and was very fortunately able to lend it to one of my orderlies who hadn't got a life belt. And as he wasn't drowned, I got the Jeeve waistcoat back again. And they always laughed because in the pocket of it I had put a huge knife given me when I left Nottingham Hospital by a Canadian soldier. The knife had Canada written on it, and he gave me that because he said, you can cut rigging with it when you're torpedoed. And I didn't need to, but still, I think Nat's got the knife now. But it's a souvenir of the time. Well, the day we were hit, we were at breakfast, and it was 8 minutes past 8 in the morning, and we were sitting in this huge dining room, and there was this sudden bang as the ship shook, and we all sort of stood up with the shock of it, and somebody shouted, "Sit down until the sirens go." And when they went, we went to our cabins to get our life belt, coat, and a blanket that we were going to take. Well, whenever we had had lifeboat practice before, I used to deliberately go to my bottom ward, in case I was going to be caught there, and start from there. But by the time I got up to the floor and I slept on, the man who was to lock the watertight doors and things had done it, and I couldn't get to my bedroom at all. And I went straight up to the boat deck, not having got a life belt from my cabin. Well, they're up there, they used to then say, I'll now show you how you could have got here and got your life belt. And I said, I'm not going to, because the man, knowing us that we're going to have a practice, has shut the door. I couldn't get to my cabin, and I come to the boat deck, and I know you've got 25 life belts there lying for emergency. Well, they used then to take me down a little narrow staircase. Only one person could get down to town, and the people were all pouring up, you see. There were two or three of us. We just said we're not going to our cabin. Well, the day we were hit, of course, the man hadn't expected it, and he hadn't shut the watertight doors, and I wasn't in the bottom ward, I was in the dining room. And I got to my cabin easily, got my life belt, got my jeep waistcoat, I took my grey army coat, and I didn't take a blanket, I picked up my own eiderdown that Mother lent me, and that eiderdown, later that day, I saw on a wounded man on the destroyer that picked me up and took me back to the Piraeus. And I got the eiderdown back because it went with this man to hospital, and the very first night we were there, I was taken to that hospital to nurse. Well, we got up on the boat deck, and the ship was listing. The captain had wanted to save the ship by getting round the island of Kia from the rocky side, where there were cliffs, to a beach where he might land the ship, you see. And I got in a lifebelt, in a lifeboat, and we were hanging over the side, and the ship was, the Titanic was so big, they had to shout from the top with megaphones. And they said, "Are the little water trap doors shut?" There were little bits in the bottom of the boat too, so that when it rained, the water drained away, and they were on deck, or something like that. Anyway, by the time we got them shut, there was about a foot of water in the boat. We had been delayed anyway, because I think it was about 37, I don't know whether they were Lascars or anyway, something to do with the ship's crew, had gone off in a lifeboat. And we were all kept back because these men were told that they had to bring their boat back again. It held over 80 people. And anyway, we landed, but the minute you touched the water, the Titanic went and left you. because she was, the propellers were coming up at the back and they were turning round. She was, the captain was trying to beat her and she went away, and all you had to do was to get away from the Britannic, whatever happens. And the boats on either side of me were cut into ribbons by our own propellers. There were only two men killed with the torpedoing of the ship. The rest were caused by these propellers. Well, all the rowing I'd ever done was on Lake Windermere after Perch, and I was standing with, in about a foot of water, and as far as I remember, it was a stoker who didn't know how to row, but he helped me with the oar I was on, and we did get away. And Matteson was very good. She lived at Poole in the summer. Her father was head of Kodak, lived in Dulwich in the winter. And she got up and got hold of the rudder in the lifeboat she was in, and really knew how to lead the ship away. And the matron being in her ship, Matteson was very lucky because she was given the Royal Red Cross for saving matron. Well, we all collect these lifeboats that got away collected, and we watched our ship go down. And she, in the end, she went forward, and one of the funnels broke off, and then she suddenly went in. And when there were no more explosions, and it was safe, lifeboats like mine went out over the wreck and picked people out of the water who were floating from lifeboats that had been cut, you see. And we had to tear up our petticoats and get bits of wood that were floating in the water, splints, but tie them up as best we could. Well, 3.5 hours later, we saw smoke, and this was two British and one French destroyer coming to help us. And the French one took most of the orderlies and the men folk like that, and the nurses went in the others, and we were taken to the Piraeus to the Admiral, British Admiral's ship, the Duncan. And we were, I remember sitting on this destroyer at the back, and we had behind us all the empty lifeboats that people had been saved in, and they all broke away except two, number 13 and number 15. And as my lucky number had always been 13, in Woling we had 13 as a telephone, and were complimented by the post office for taking it. And when I went on the Britannic, I found that my cabin was number 15, and Matteson was number 13 in it with me, and I was 15, something like that. I know that it was all, ever since, when I take a ticket in a raffle, I give the name numbers 15 and 13, but I never win anything. Well, we were in the crowd waiting before these destroyers came, and some notices were floating in the water saying, patients only, nurses only. These the matron used to put across the deck at night on ropes to stop us all mixing. She didn't approve of a nurse and doctor having a flirtation up on the boat deck, and she tried to separate all the different classes of people. And when one of these notices floated by, when we were in these lifeboats, all feeling, I don't know what we were feeling. We'd just seen our wonderful ship go down. One man who saw this notice saw it and said, "I'm surprised the old dame didn't put a notice to say doctors and nurses shouldn't drown on the same side of the ship." And I didn't dare to laugh because the matron was too close to me. But it was really very amusing.